Welcome to the Beer Guys Radio Show. We are live at the Georgia Craft Brewers Festival, Atlanta, Georgia. A little overcast, Brian, but the weather is nice.
It's really nice.
It is. We're going to have a good time. We're going to talk to some brewers today, and we're going to talk about collaboration brews.
Indeed.
And malt liquor.
Yes,
two
malt liquor.
Great things that go great together. I'm Tim Dennis. Brian Hewitt, how you doing?
I'm doing really good, and I like the idea of malt liquor coming together with collaborations because that's what collaborations of malt liquor is all about, getting together with people.
Getting together, good times, friends.
Correct.
Absolutely.
I agree. Yes.
So, Brian, we are going to talk to you here. We've got Southern Brewing Company with us, and we have John Doss. John is the head brewer
Correct.
At Southern. John,
correct.
Welcome. Thanks for joining us,
Thanks
man.
Thanks for having us.
And we have Jay Harris. Jay, you are the sales director, correct?
What's going on, everybody?
It's good to see you, and I think the beer that you have today hits both our topics.
Yeah, perfect.
So this is a collaboration brew, and you collaborated with
Academia.
Over in, you guys are out of Athens, Georgia. Academia is out of Athens as well, and we have a malt liquor here.
We have a malt liquor
collaboration. Not something you see a ton in craft these days. Underappreciated style, in my opinion. Personally.
I mean, we like to agree.
Yeah.
Which is what kind of sparked the us going down this road in the first place.
Cool.
Craft malt liquor seems like an oxymoron to me. That's part of the reason I really liked the idea of talking to you about it. But it doesn't have to be, right?
I mean, it doesn't. I mean, it's kind of obvious that in the craft beer world these days, lagers are starting to take off. Like, they are becoming
right.
the more popular style. And we haven't seen many people do a malt liquor. I mean, and that's what got us talking about it. We've drank them since we were of legal drinking age, of course.
Of course. Yes, never
Everybody
before.
Has a story. No, Everybody has a story right. on malt liquor. So.
Yeah.
And it's just one of those things, you know, I hate to say that we're just trying to look at what other people aren't doing, but you have to look at what other people aren't doing. And so we felt like it was not represented, wanted to take a stab at it.
I tell you what, man, I love a malt liquor just because it does bring back nostalgia for me. You know, in my younger days, I did drink a lot of oldie, you know, Old English 800. I drank the St. Ides, which I think, Jay, you were saying you were on the St. Ides as well there.
Yeah, I started out with the Colt 45 and then got St. Ides when I started getting the flavors. And don't get wrong, I'm 20, 21 years old, you know, and in college and trying to find the quickest way to get somewhere. And when the flavors came out, those were just woo.
Yeah,
we bring it to the frat house and just go through the roof. So
I love the Mickey's Big Mouse too, the little barrel bottles.
I thought forever.
Mickey's, if they were ice cold, I really enjoyed them. If they got anywhere warmer than ice cold, it was just horrid. It was just awful.
Oh yeah, there was a Athens people will know the bar Max Canada. Used to always be Jameson Shots and Mickey's.
Jameson Shots and Mickey's.
Always.
Okay, one of my favorite drinking buddies when I was having Mickey's was this horse that I found. We were driving around in the country one time. I had a buddy driving around, and just this is probably 1 a.m. We're driving down a country road. I lived in Arkansas at the time. Lots of country roads and stuff there, but we're driving down and we just see a horse standing at the fence line, and we're like, I need to talk to this horse, Brian. I have to see what this horse has to say.
Did the horse look like he was brooding?
He looked thirsty.
Oh, thirsty.
He looked thirsty. Oh. So I took a bottle of Mickey's Big Mouth and kind of held it up to him, and he starts licking, so I poured it. The horse drank a whole bottle of Mickey's, man.
Smart horse.
Yeah. So I'm like, so he's my favorite horse, my drinking buddy there. So I don't know how long horses live, but hopefully if he's around.
That's a long time. That's a long time.
Probably
good,
longer than you
a few days shorter after having the Mickey's. You know, this is going to surprise you. I somehow skipped the entire malt liquor stage.
Okay.
I have very few memories or instances where I ever had malt liquor. I did have Old English a few times, and I did try, like, was it the Brass Monkey where you pour orange juice in it?
Yep.
Just because
That's
I had
it.
To
yeah.
try it.
Oh, yeah.
Just out of curiosity, but I grew up in the land of craft beer, and our beer was not expensive back in the day, so I just drank the good beer that was around. I didn't feel
beer.
The need to you know, go out after those things. Now, after the fact, again, ironically, 40-ounce nights we did do, but that was a hodgepodge, only a couple of times we ever did them. So I feel like I missed out on a cultural event that was significant.
Come on, you got to remember, Ed, we're 40 ounces. You know, you tape pans.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
We did that to him for his 40th birthday.
Yeah.
When he turned 40, we made him do that.
And I'm good with that.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, something I want to interject here real quick before we move on. When we do our live streams, our buddy Stephen Pete from Kettle Rock Brewing
Oh, yes.
is always on there to say cheers from Kettle Rock Brewing. We're not missing out on that today. Steven's actually two booths down for us.
Yes.
And he already did come down to say cheers from Kettle Rock. So we're going to say cheers to Kettle Rock Brewing.
Cheers to Kettle Rock Brewing.
We got to give them the shout out there. But guys, we've got your malt liquor here right now. And I believe this is Eagle Fang. Eagle Fang, tell us about Eagle Fang.
So it is all Riverbend malt. It's a blend of two of their different Pilsner malts. And we use toasted flaked rice and then some of the Cumberland corn from Riverbend as well.
Okay. And for those that aren't aware, Riverbend Malt is a craft monster out of Asheville, North Carolina.
Correct.
So, you know, a lot of local craft, small batch malts and everything there. So some really cool stuff. We had them on the show a couple years ago,
I think two, three years ago. I think they serve all of the Southeast, basically. Yeah. And they have grains from all the states around, including some from Georgia. Yeah. But I think Tennessee, Carolinas, from all over, basically.
Yep. And it's great. We're not going to veer off too far there, but it's nice that we are getting these craft maltsters where we can get some stuff, a little local flavor and stuff from the area there. And Riverbend's grown a lot. They're very popular down this
Every time I see them in the news, it's about them growing in size, because seriously, every brewer you talk to that's from the South is usually mentioning using some of their malt, at the very least, because they have a lot of fun regional selections. And that's the best part about the little craft maltster, is you're going to get stuff there that you're not going to get from the big guys, because they can't. It's stuff that just can't be produced at that scale.
Yeah.
Yeah, we like to try to use them on, you know, styles that we can kind of show their quality through, you know, like all of our lagers and then our mixed culture beer, we use Riverbend malt for.
Okay, very cool. You know, talking of collaborations in general there, just a super cool thing to bring breweries together. And a lot of the brewers that I talk to say one reason they enjoy doing that, they're always so heads down in their own brew house. It gives them a chance to get out there, you know, that they don't get to see it as much. I saw one recently, Brian, that I really want to try. Embrace the Funk out of Nashville.
Part of the Yazoo
family is part of, they're kind of the central point on that, but it's like an 8-way collaboration with, like, Jester King's involved, and I don't remember all the other breweries. Brian, is that in the notes anywhere by chance?
Unfortunately,
but
I forget to look that,
you know, like
that
an 8-way brewery collaboration. But, guys, why do you like to, John, why do you like to collab?
I mean, it's always fun to hang out with buddies, right?
Right.
And when you can get paid to hang out with buddies, that's even better.
Can't argue.
But also, like, you know, talking shop, you know, I've known Morgan since before Academia opened up, and it's fun to get together, compare brewing styles, pick up on tips of stuff that, like, they do stuff different than we do stuff different, and, like, talking ideas, talking through processes. That's how we kind of get better as brewers, right? Like, we figure out where our shortcomings are. They may be doing something better on the brew side than we are, and it's hard for us to know that without, you know, getting together, going through a brew day.
Some breweries will they'll come together with a concept. I'm not sure if this is what you did, but they'll both go and brew it independently, or they'll get together at each brewery. Did you do it that way? Did both of you try a stab at it, or did you just settle on the one?
We just brewed this at our facility.
Okay.
And we are brewing a second beer at Academia in the next couple of weeks, but it's not going to be the same beer. Unless we, you know, decide to change direction, we are actually looking at doing an IPA collab on the second version.
There's my request for breweries. Do collaborations in both of your brewery.
Okay.
I want to see the different take, because it's always fun when we've, with our homebrew club, it's been a little while, but we've all brewed the same recipe before. And if you have half a dozen guys brew the exact same recipe, you're getting a half a dozen different beers.
Oh, totally.
You may see the similarities there, but I love seeing what the individual breweries, you know, can bring to something with that.
Yeah.
And I've seen some brewers that have tried to do that, Brian, and like some of the hophead breweries, they just can't help. They're like, I know this is only supposed to be this many hops, but I think it needs some more
hops.
Right,
added a bunch of extra hops. Yeah. And that's kind of fun, because then you, at that point, you can still see the difference and you discuss. I'm like, well, we taste this and it's either better or worse, and let's discuss. I'm like, do you regret putting those in, or should, you know, how do you go forward from this? Like, in that vein, is there anything about what you're drinking now, are the things that you would change? Like, maybe raising the ABV to, like, 14%.
13.9.
Yeah.
Not against it. I selfishly don't drink super high alcohol beers, so that's what, when we were talking. And, you know, with a beer like this, with not a lot of malt backbone, the higher ABV you get, you have to worry about like harsh alcohol burn. There's a perceptive sweetness that comes along with alcohol. So, like, you know, you start pushing 10 or 12%, it could just like seem sweeter. So it's finding that fine line. And, you know, that's, again, selfishly, I was trying to tailor this a little bit towards my taste buds and, like, I guess
sure.
Morgan as
understandable.
Well.
Understandable, yeah.
So, yeah, it's...
Yeah, when we had the DKML,
yes.
the founder's one...
Did you guys try
it? It was almost barley
actually.
Wine.
I didn't.
Yeah.
It was
yeah.
sweet. It was almost barley wine.
What was the ABV on that one? Was it high?
It was like 14.2.
Okay,
it
so
it yeah. accidentally hit shelves in Georgia for like a couple days, and they're like,
I remember.
This isn't
remember.
Supposed to be here. We got to take this back.
But hurry up and buy as much as you
yeah,
can
exactly.
before the government comes and swoops
yeah.
in. What's the highest do you think you could take a beer like this ABV-wise and have it still be palatable?
I mean, I would honestly, like anything under 10, I would probably be comfortable with. But, I mean, this is all just, you know, pulling it out of the air.
Yeah.
Anything over 10, I would start worrying about some of the harsher alcohols or the sweetness.
Right. Some of my collabs that I've thought of in the past, Brian, that I really like, and I know you and I talked about really loving this one, but Jester King and Wicked Weed did a grisette many years ago called The Parking Lot.
Yes, correct.
And it was stellar. Still one of the beers I love. One that I just love just because of the fun, and it was a good beer. In my younger days, my days before I was able to legally drink, I lived in New York. And so my first couple of beers, like sneaking, my first beer was a Budweiser. I've told that story a few times, so I won't go there. But sneaking beers out of my buddy's dad's fridge was Ginny Cream Ale, Genesee Cream.
Yeah.
So that's got, you know, a special place in my heart. And they collaborated with Other Half and did Ginny Dream. And so I actually had to go on the forums and hunt these down. I'm not normally a big beer trader, but I had to hunt that one down. I had to try it. That was a good one. Those are a couple that I've, you know, really enjoyed. A couple collaborations I've really enjoyed. So.
I have to throw in, you mentioned The Parking Lot, which was a particular favorite of mine. Really, really, that put grisettes on the radar for me. That
right.
That was a phenomenal, like, life-changing beer. Southerly Love from Creature Comforts and Seventh Son.
Good
that was
point.
A beer
yes.
I obsessed over, and I think I still have a bottle that I can't bring myself to open.
I
of the
I
2015,
the, brewery, yeah.
the
yeah.
original. They brewed it again, and I don't think it was quite the same, but it's a wild ale, so it's like it could go different directions. And I think the second one was released 2 or 3 years later, so like the climate's different, the barrels they had were probably different, everything could have been different, and it wasn't a collaboration.
I was gonna say, if you're using a house mix culture, that thing could drift too over years.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Like bacteria will come in and fade out as they develop over time. You know, that brings me to something we were talking to before we got on the air. One of the collabs you want to get into at some point in the future is a wild ale, right?
Absolutely. Mixed culture. We have a 60-barrel fooder. We've got a pretty good supply of wine barrels.
Amphoras. You guys have several amphoras.
Yeah, we have four amphoras.
Yeah.
I've got one beer in them, one beer packaged, waiting to be ready.
Gotcha.
So we love mixed culture at Southern, but it's just a style that kind of, you know, blew up real popular 2015 through 2017-ish. It started to come back down in popularity. It's still there. Definitely doesn't have the legs it used to. And so I've been talking with a couple other breweries who are either starting mixed culture programs or had the interest. And, like, I would love, like, that's where I would like to try to revive it to a certain degree. Just to try to get some more out there.
You know, speaking of that, John, another style that I think had its moment, but that kind of passed, is the Brett IPA.
Yes.
Or Brett beers in general. And I always loved those, man. They were some Brett Saisons. Brett IPAs had a moment maybe 4 or 5 years ago, I guess, as well. So.
Yeah. And part of what I really loved about that Berliner from Halfway Crooks that we had, I think we talked about in the show previously, it had Brett character to it. It had all kinds of other things going on, but I keyed in on that Brett, and I love that. I miss that. I would like to see that come back.
Oh, yeah.
I want to see, man, for a while everybody was doing Brett, and maybe it got excessive, and maybe they did it to death. But, man, that's a style that needs to, Brett as an element in beer needs to return. Maybe.
Oh, absolutely. Just on its own. It does.
Yeah.
Brett can ride on its own. I've mentioned this many times, but a brewery out of Colorado, was it Trinity?
I think it was Trinity.
Trinity did
Red Swingline. Was that the one?
They did Red Swingline, I think, but they did that Magical Britannomyces tour.
Yes.
Where they did the one base beer and had one strain of bread in it. So, like, you could get
that's
the whole
really
one.
Awesome concept.
Right. So fun doing that. And I only got a few of them. I couldn't find the whole set of them there. But
those were phenomenal.
That was fun to check out there.
No, that's a really good idea.
So, how about you, Jay? Any collabs that you recall that you just really enjoyed?
The one that popped out in my head just real quickly was the collaboration they did with New Belgium, and they did a whole 12-pack of all the collaborations they did for like their birthday. Like, it was like the 20th or 15th year. I can't remember which year it was. It was like a whole 12-pack, and they brought all them wild beers out with like from Allagash to, I mean, it was just an amazing package.
Oh,
and I just remember having that package. It was ridiculous.
I think that was fun.
Remember that
Sierra Nevada did their beer camp for a
beer
few years.
Camp is similar
beer
to
camp
that.
Exactly. Remember that same thing, but these are all wild beers. They teamed up with everybody, all their best buddy breweries, you know. And
that's cool.
It was really Lost super Abbey cool. in that one.
Yeah, Lost Abbey was there. There was four of them. It was three beers, four times. So they had four different breweries and three beers from each one of them, full pack, and they were all bottles. So it was like just super cool because the bottles were fading out in the present moment. And cans were coming heavy. So it was really super unique to see it. And then they did that, Pilsner Urquell, and I think it was Three Taverns. They did that Pilsner.
Pilsen Liberation.
That was a solid beer. We just had produced our Pilsen Gold for the first time, which is a German Pilsner, and that came out the same time, Dave, and I was like tasting each other. I'm like,
That's a really good... We were fortunate enough to go down to Three Taverns and get with Brian there at the brewery, the owner, and pour through it, talk about it, hang out. He did Milko pours for us.
Yes.
You know, so we got to try all the different pours. And
nice.
Just a great story and a cool beer. Good call there. That one was a fun one.
Very smart,
John, how about you? Any collabs that you loved?
Well, it's been a little while, but Creature did a collab with Other Half. And it was not Other Half. It was Off Color. Excuse me.
Okay.
Off Color. Okay.
Yeah, I can't remember the name of that. The beer. I just remember going to the brewery and trying it and drinking it. Makes me sound like a novice, not remember what the beer style was.
There's so many beers out there, man. You can't remember them all. Yeah.
But it was great. It was awesome.
Honestly, in a lot of cases, the name is the least important part, perhaps after the packaging itself. Beer is good and you remember the beer, it does help in being able to tell people about it. Like, which beer was that? Well, I don't remember, but it was amazing and Creature did it.
I believe it was an Australian lager or Australian.
I remember
Hills.
That. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't recall.
I may go ask them when we leave here. But, I'm pretty sure it was an Australian lager of some sort. But I remember going to the brewery specifically to try that beer, and it was awesome. Like, I had a great time.
They've really done some good work when it comes to collaborations.
Totally.
Like, they put out top-notch stuff already. I'm surprised at how often their collabs are hits. I guess it shouldn't be, because collabs are difficult, because you got two people coming together to work on something that have completely different approaches to beer, typically. So,
yeah, you learn something. Sometimes the way to do something, sometimes the way not to do something, but there's something learned there.
Did
but
you learn anything fun. In the process of doing this, like, to apply in the future?
I mean, we talked about lagering techniques. Right before this beer got here, I bought some spunding valves, which is something we haven't done. We just started doing a few lagers last year. So this year I'm trying to, like, step up our lager game. So talking with Morgan, he's got... horizontal tanks. Unfortunately, we do not have horizontal tanks, but spunding valves are something that, after talking to him, I brought them into the brewery prior to the collab. So talking with him through the process of brewing this beer and spunding it, we kind of just set up the fermentation side almost as much as we did the recipe development.
So I got two questions for you there.
Sure.
What are the benefits of the horizontal tanks? I've seen a lot of people do them. And the follow-up there is, what does spunding do for a beer?
So the horizontal tanks, from my understanding, it has to do with hydrostatic pressure. So if you think of a cylinder conical tank, you have a cylinder of beer, you've got all that liquid pressure pushing down on your lager yeast, where if you lay it down flat, you have less hydrostatic pressure.
Okay.
So the yeast have a little bit less...
Less stress, right?
And I may be talking totally out the side of my mouth this, but you're going to have a shorter distance for it to fall out for flocculating as well as more surface area on the bottom, quicker flocking?
Yes, but I feel like most lager brewers aren't trying to speed things along.
I
mean, everyone wants to turn their beers out faster, but I think if you're doing horizontals, you're most likely letting the, like, wait until the beer is ready.
Gotcha. You know, makes sense.
I think it does speed things up, too, because you've got greater real estate for the yeast to work. So it, if they're all at the bottom in a cylindrical, you've got a very small area for them to work. If it's horizontal, you've got a lot of room for them to work across, and like all the yeast can get at different beer. The Correct. Same reason you don't store beer on its side when you're cellaring it, because you're giving that little bit of oxygen and air that's in there more real estate over the beer to do its oxidation.
Right.
So, you know, it does kind of make sense to
me.
So that's correct.
Yeah, that sounds good to me. Okay. All right.
The Spunding, though.
But yeah, Spunding, I'm always in a quest for better head retention on our beers. And that is one of Spunding's supposed to be a tool to help with that. There is some MBAA research out there, I believe, about another quick way to turn around some lagers, fermenting them under pressure, as well as saving CO2.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, with this beer and a couple of other lagers we've just released, you know, we're Spunding, you know, a couple degrees Plato above terminal and allowing the beer to naturally carbonate. From a brewery our size process standpoint, we're saving on CO2 costs. Because that beer going from our fermenter to the bright tank is mostly carbed, if not fully carbed. So we're not having to purchase CO2 to then carb that
beer. And the Spunding valve releases excess pressure so you can,
kind of
set there, is that right?
It's a way for you to adjust how, like, it's an adjustable PRV, or pressure relief valve, if you
will. Right, okay,
so
gotcha.
You can set it to a certain PSI, and once your fermentation vessel reaches, you know, say it's 15 PSI, anything over 15, it's going to start allowing that out, but it's going to hold your tank
hold
at 15,
that pressure
15
there,
PSI.
Right?
Yeah.
Good stuff, guys.
And so the
Good
quality
stuff.
Of the carbonation is different. Is it? It's better? Is it,
yeah.
From the drinking perspective.
Yeah, from the drinking perspective, it's like tighter bubbles, right? So, like, even going back to mixed culture, it's essentially the same thing as bottle conditioning. You know, you're doing that re-fermentation process inside of a bottle. It's fermenting in the bottle, creating CO2, and it's not going anywhere.
Gotcha.
So the Spunding valve essentially allows you to do that on a tank.
Good stuff.
Awesome.
Yeah. Well, guys, thanks for your time. If folks want to find out what the heck is going on at Southern Brewing Company, what's the best way for them to do that?
SoBrewCo.com, or check us out on Facebook, Instagram. We even got, like, a little TikTok page we play with. So, you know, we got it a little
Easy
bit
enough.
Everywhere. Such everywhere. So.
Cool.
And then always come by the brewery in Athens, Georgia. We got a tap room in Monroe. And one exciting thing I was going to drop in there is we have a little bit of kegs left over of this.
Of the malt liquor club.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
So, go to Athens.
So
get
probably
yourself.
Look for it on draft around the little area, state of Georgia, a few places, you know. So my goal next couple weeks, try to get this beer out there and get in the streets a little bit and let people enjoy some malt liquor at your local favorite watering hole.
Sounds. And you might be able to get your crowler close to a 40 if you want to have that 40.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Keep an eye out there.
Or a 64.
Yeah.
It just goes.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's awesome. Fun. So, yeah, we can't wait to get to the market because beer is really legit. It's really just, you know, you'll be surprised when you taste it.
Good stuff. Well, thanks, guys. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thank you,
Absolutely.
Guys. Appreciate it.
Cheers, guys.
Y'all, we are going to take a break. But first, I do want to thank you, our sponsor, Truck and Tap. Truck and Tap has been with Beer Guys Radio from the very beginning,
Indeed.
Brian. They've got three locations across Atlanta, one right in my hometown of Woodstock, Brian. And if you go down to Main Street Woodstock, you can walk up on the sidewalk and get a beer, Brian.
I've done that, and
you
it's awesome.
You can do it. You can walk up and get a beer. You can sit on their patio out back. They're going to have a food truck there with some great food. They rotate. You can get tacos one day, barbecue one day, Brian, a lobster roll.
Indeed,
if you want
yeah.
one, you can do all that. Set on their patio, set inside. When the weather's nice, they open the doors, and it's a whole open-air area. And downtown Woodstock is a cool place to roam around and enjoy a beer from Truck and Tap. They also have locations in Alpharetta and Duluth. Go check them out there. Truck and Tap, thank you so much for sponsoring Beer Guys Radio.
And we're back. We've got Craig McCoskey, the owner of Round Trip Brewing, and Matt Curling, the owner of Variant Brewing. And we're going to continue our conversation about all things collab and just everything
beer
else.
Beer in general.
Yeah.
You know, I have a question that somebody stopped by the booth a little while ago when we were on our break. And we talked malt liquor in the first segment of the show. And they're like, what makes a malt liquor? And I can't believe I didn't ask that when we were talking about malt liquor, but can either of you, what makes a beer a malt liquor as opposed to any other style?
No, smiles
see,
all around.
No, see, okay.
Here's
all right.
the thing. here's the
we
thing.
We promise you all that we will find out what exactly defines a malt liquor, and
strong,
we'll come back.
Strong and cheap. I don't know.
Yeah, that's
I,
what.
I'm
well,
sure.
That's what they're like. Well, it's bottom of the barrel. It's cheap. It's this.
Not
and that,
bottom
so.
Of the barrel. That's the weirdest.
Well, right. That's what. Yeah. That, but you know, they say that it's from the middle of the tank. I think that's
oh
like,
that's right. You want the heads and tails? You cut those, and that's where you get your
tails.
You get your premium malt liquor.
Malt.
I always used to think of it as being
malt liquor is Colt 45.
Right, Colt 45, Old English, the classics.
Mickey's Big Mouse. Yes.
Mickey Big Mouse. Yes, yes, yes. But we're drinking a beer that is, I mean, technically a malt liquor, right? It's got malt in it. There's liquor in it. But what we prefer to call this, Matt, this is free spirit. This is an Italian Pilsner.
Yes, it is.
And is this another collaboration brew?
It is. Yeah, we brought two collaborations today.
All right.
The collaboration that we brought for the festival was Perception Palace with Inner Voice Brewing Company. It's an 8.5% hazy IPA. But we also brought Free Spirit, which is a very close beer to us. It's a dear friend of our families and the Watts family and the Fox family. My brother and sister went to high school with Brittany Fox, who married Brian Watts, who's brothers with, this is long, brothers with Dustin Watts, who's the president of Terrapin.
Cool.
And his wife was shot and killed in a parking lot in Atlanta many, many years ago. And so they created the Free Spirit beer, as well as a charity called Small Dreams Foundation, where they honor her and do different collaborations to kind of encourage people to live freely, you know, go outside and be a free spirit. So this one was a really cool one to work on with them. They've done multiple charity runs that they do in Roswell every year, and they would always end a variant. But this year, instead, we just brewed a beer for it. So
awesome, man. And Italian Pilsner, we know there's a lot of flavors of Pilsner out there right now. I even saw a French Pilsner listed recently. What makes a Pilsner an Italian Pilsner?
So Italian Pilsners are going to be really dry and crisp, as well as have a light dry hop. So we actually dry hopped this with Saphir and Holler Tower Tradition. We did about a half a pound per barrel. And because this was a, I'm going to do a shout out here. Yakima Valley actually reached out to us and supplied the hops for the dry hop on this because it was a charity
awesome.
Beer, and they saw it and wanted to support the message. So
good
it's
stuff.
Awesome. Shout out to them.
You know, I want to back up a little bit and share our history with Matt. With Matt Curling of Variant Brewing. Matt, we've known you 3, 4, 5 years before Variant opened, I'd say. We've known each other a while now. Man, the years just fly by. But
it really
we
has,
knew Matt.
Yeah.
Matt and I would always chat back and forth about homebrew and homebrew competitions and that. And I would always consider myself like competing with Matt. And it's one of those situations where if you're the one in first place, you don't realize you're in competition with someone, because if I got third, Matt would get second or first in a competition. I don't think he ever knew that I was trying to chase him there, but you know, we had good times talking about homebrew, going around on the homebrew circuit here in Georgia, Brian and I, when we were homebrewing.
Yeah.
And sticking
and
out there.
We homebrewed some beers.
We brewed
you,
in
yeah.
your basement brew pub.
And your basement brew pub was legit.
In my basement. Yeah. I've brewed in your garage.
Yeah, yeah.
Correct.
Good times, man. So it's always cool to, you know, to see friends open breweries, you know,
thank
that you kind of went. So and you're making just fantastic beer, man.
Agreed.
So can't argue with that,
very
right,
good.
Craig?
No.
Thank you.
Yeah,
so we take some awesome. Credit for your success.
Yes. Yeah. You're welcome,
by,
Matt. You're
by
welcome.
Virtue of us having
thank
been
you guys.
There.
Yes.
Yes.
But no, this is really good, man. I'm really enjoying these lighter drinkable beers that were getting these days, Brian, that we get around.
I agree. So, Craig, you also have some collaborations. You've got multiple collaborations going.
Yeah.
And you've got, you know what, you're wearing a hat from one of your favorite collaborations. I think we should actually talk about that one first, because you're wearing the gear for it.
Yeah. So, you know, we haven't done a lot of collaboration yet. We're, you know, still fairly new. But I had an opportunity to go down to Guatemala. So just kind of a friend of a friend knew a guy that started a brewery down in Antigua. Started talking to him, and he's like, hey, come down to Guatemala. It'd be awesome. I'm like, oh, that's funny. Guatemala. I can't go to, and then I'm like, let's do it. Okay, sorry, is this actual radio? Can I say
yeah,
that?
Yeah, you can't say that, but we've got really cool
bleep that out. Sorry,
we've got cool
okay.
bleep sounds.
Sorry.
I'll take care
awesome.
Of that.
Awesome. So I was like, sure. And so I bought a plane ticket, and then he's like, so you're actually coming? I'm like, yeah, let's do this. All right. So I went down to Guatemala, and it was like the best week of my life. Like, I think it's awesome when, I mean, and honestly, that's really all what Round Trip is. We want to somehow really encourage people to go out and do new experiences and try new things, go places that may be a little bit uncomfortable then. Sonia, that was an uncomfortable trip with me, wife, and a nine-year-old going down to Guatemala and like not knowing anybody and just showing up at a brewery and doing a collaboration. And it was a sweet experience. We really love the culture, love the food down there, and made some new friends.
Did you know the brewer like in real life before you went down there?
Did not. Yeah. So it
was love this story. Yeah. Just jumping and going. Yeah. That's amazing. Yeah.
So a guy that I loosely knew through a golf group of mine. He was a founder, owner of the brewery, and he put me in touch with the guy that does the day-to-day brewing and owner down there, and just started talking with him and kind of developed that relationship on text and just said, yeah, let's do it. Let's go down and see what this is all about. Showed up, and I was very pleasantly surprised. It was the best beer I had in Guatemala. I tried a lot of the breweries in Guatemala, and they were the best that I had.
Now, I don't think we've identified this. Your hat says Antigua Cerveza. Yep. Is that the name of the brewery?
Yep, Antigua Cerveza.
Okay. What are the what's popular down there right now? What styles are jamming in Antigua? Well,
they're starting to get more popular with the hoppy stuff. I think, you know, whenever you see countries that are a little bit behind the U.S., just think of what U.S. craft beer was really, really behind like 10 to 15 years ago.
Yeah, right.
And that's like kind of normal-ish West Coast IPAs. Nothing too crazy is going on down there. So, yeah, that's kind of what's going on down there. Yeah.
They haven't gotten to face-melting IBU beers, because I remember that for about 15 years.
And honestly, they have a cold IPA, but they don't know how to, like, market that. So they just call it an IPA. They don't want to, like, confuse people. Like,
We can brew it. Yeah. No one's going to know. We talked to a brewery, and I think Argentina, I think it was, and this was probably 3 or 4 years ago, but like his most popular beer was a Cascadian Dark Ale.
Yeah, really? Black IPA.
Gosh, I love those beers when they were popular. It was like 18 months here and they were just like the thing.
Yeah, just a little hit there. Yep. Yeah. And he mentioned that, you know, saying Cascadian, people associated it with the Pacific Northwest, so it had kind of an allure to it and stuff. But it's always interesting. We talked to a brewery in Ireland, and they said, yeah, we're like the U.S. maybe 5 years behind.
Right.
You know, we're brewing these styles and just having it, kind of have a good time. But that's awesome, man. International collaboration, it's always fun to see how
So they made the same down there. It was a Kolsch, and they made it down there, and they brewed twice as much of us, and they've sold through it already. So they're going to make more.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So part of the collaboration experiences you learn from the people you're brewing with. What did you learn from them? Because that's got to be an entirely different – it's an entirely different world, basically. Right.
Well, what was funny, I learned that not all brewers speak English.
True.
Walked in. The owner wasn't there yet. He was running a little behind, so I knocked on the door. First of all, there was a security guard at the gate, and I said, hey, I know Jay, and he shakes his head at me. I'm like, oh, shit. Let me get him on the phone. So I got Jay on the phone, and he started speaking Spanish to the security guard. I eventually got let in, went up to the brew deck, and we had to use like Google Translate to like talk to each other on the brew deck. I mean, really what I learned down there is, that they, the excitement down there, going to somewhere that a country that only has 18 breweries, to see the excitement there of what they're doing and how they're like so much at the forefront, not just being in the craft community, but like they were the leaders of the craft community. It was so interesting to see. It's kind of like if you walked in Sierra Nevada in like, you know, the mid 80s, like it felt like that. So that was a cool thing to see, kind of the culture of not just what they're in, but what they're building.
Matt, have you had the chance to do any international collaborations yet?
No, not yet. My brother has done a lot of mission work in Nicaragua, so we do have a few friends down there that actually do own and operate a brewery, but I forget the name off the top of my head. But it would be something really cool. I would definitely be into it.
I think it'd be fun to see, you know, like what are the styles they're drinking there, because it varies very across different. The U.S. Because I've talked to people, I mentioned this a couple weeks ago, that we've got a pretty good lager scene here. You know, of course, Craig, you're part of that. We've got you guys at Round Trip. We have Halfway Crooks. We have Good Word doing a lot of good lagers. We have Arches doing a lot of good lagers. And so because what's around me is a good lager scene, I just assume that's the craft beer movement now, you know? But I'll talk to people, I think it was maybe even Chicago or some bigger cities, a lot in the West are still not really on the lager
game.
They're
still West Coast IPA, very
right.
strong.
Yeah, when I was in Chicago, yeah. a lot of hazy.
Right.
But they had, what's the best one? The one that I like in Chicago a lot. Shoot, can't remember the name of it. But they have, I mean, they have some lager beers there, too.
Yeah, there's a little bit going on there, for sure. But it's just interesting to see the variance here. And I've heard people comment that have came here from the West Coast and that they loved our, like, sour scene here. Like, the kettle sours, the fruited kettle sours and stuff. They're like, look, we don't see these out West that much. And, again, I never thought much of it. I guess they call it the Florida Weiss.
They kind of do, yeah. The fruited kettle sour, yeah, the Florida Weiss, I think, basically. So Matt had a weird face when I said Florida Weiss. And like
Florida Weiss.
Do you object to that concept? The kettle sour with heavily fruit, Florida Weiss, is that a wrong description?
I'm making gozas, not vices. So,
okay.
Sorry.
Okay.
Well, maybe, you know. But I was saying I think that you're talking about popular styles between like different states and different regions. I think it's even more diverse and more spread out than that. I mean, it varies between Atlanta and it varies between Roswell. I mean, and we're 25 minutes apart.
Right.
So the people in Atlanta, I mean, you guys can sell a ton of lagers. Where in Roswell, I mean, people walk in and they want IPA, they want fruited sours. You know, lagers typically sit a little bit longer in our space than most of the breweries I talk to in Atlanta. They're like, we can't make enough lagers. We're just you're selling through them. The market changes so quickly in just small
geographic
changes
regions.
In areas.
Yeah.
yeah.
Oh, that's crazy. What's next? What are you seeing coming up? Are there any trends you see building? Craig, anything on your end?
No, I mean, you say you can't sit making up lagers. I mean, yeah, lagers are our best-selling beers. We make a lot of different stuff. But, yeah, I mean, our straight out of Munich Kellis, that's our number one seller. Our Czech Amber's doing well, so seeing a lot more Czech beers out in the market.
I think we had that on Side Pull.
When we were down, we loved so much, and it wasn't...
Yeah. You didn't want to leave. I remember that.
You're right.
We run into that a few times.
I wanted to lay down under the tap and just pull it occasionally. You know.
Brian, doesn't Craig owe you a smoked IPA?
Yes,
IPA? We did talk about that. That's
rock
the next IPA.
Yeah. Yes.
Wow.
You promised, like, possibly
that's
on Twitter to make it. I saw.
We did. I think you said you wanted to make it, and you were completely against it.
I'm against it, yes.
No, he totally is. But
I don't think that's going to be the new
at all.
Thing.
What's that?
I don't think that's going to be the new thing.
There we go.
I don't know what it's going to be, but
I don't think it's
going to be fight. I'm going to fight the people who know how to make beer and go with my gut. This is rock IPA.
Yes, today we have a Roush IPA.
Yes, yeah.
That's a new thing. So, yes, you're going to make it?
Maybe. Strong maybe.
Strong
maybe.
That? It's
strong
a hard maybe there, Brian.
That's a definite no for anybody listening.
Yeah.
So, yes.
Yeah.
But you know what? I would definitely drink it at least once. I might actually really enjoy it. I had a coffee IPA earlier, and I was reminded that I like the style. It's polarizing, and it's hard to do right. But if it is done well, it's a really good beer. Like, if it's done badly, it's a terrible beer. But,
yeah, getting those flavors to play well together is tough.
It's rough. I think you got to choose the right beans for that, and you got to choose the right smoked malts for
So I had a chance. So we entered the competition, but also I was a judge in the competition as well for this.
That seems like a
is this a conflict of
conflict
interest?
Of interest right
I
there?
Don't think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
You can
so,
do that.
So I judge experimental category.
Oh, okay.
No, yeah, I wasn't allowed to judge my own beer.
Okay.
That was
okay.
the thing, yeah.
Yeah.
No, yeah. I judged lager and made it first place. What's wrong with that?
I win again.
Yeah. No, but I judge Drowned Valley. They made a coffee blonde. Oh my, if y'all haven't had a chance to go over to Drowned Valley yet, try this beer. It's awesome.
Okay. I was actually just gonna mention when you were out running around the festival, they came by and dropped me off a pour of that.
Oh man.
And it was really good. And I'm like, I should save some of this for Brian to try. And then I'm like, no, I'm not going to do that. Brian,
why would you do that to me? You know how much I
drank it. I drank
it. It was one of the best coffee flavors I've had in a beer.
It's good.
It was
very good. You need to get it, Brian.
I will do that. I will do that after we're done with this.
Okay. Fair enough. Fair enough, man. Good stuff. Well, Craig, you focus a lot on the European lagers, right? Just a lot of that. And again, as we've talked about, that's popular here now. We do well with those in Georgia. How far do you stretch out there? How far do you spread your wings on beers?
Well, I think what we've always tried to do with kind of the positioning of what we're doing beer-wise is we want to say, yes, we're German-focused, but there's also that you can get very pigeonholed if you say you're a German brewery, you know.
Right.
Oh, y'all can't make anything other than Hef, yeah. You know, yeah. Hellas, whatever. So what we try to do is, yeah, we'll make the classic styles, but we also say, hey, how can we push either a certain ingredient or process or style a different way? So like what we have coming up here pretty soon is we have a beer called Seawalker. So it's a Goza. But I blended it with a Belgian white. So I was the brewer at Celis in Austin before, which Pierre Celis. Yeah, yeah. So Pierre Celis, he was the original brewer, okay. Owner of Hoegaarden, took that recipe and turned it into a kettle sour salted Goza. So it's doing things like that. It's not just making the traditional European styles, but how can we take these styles and like do something that not, I won't say like, weird, but like how can we make these styles and push them in different directions,
right?
Or process, you know. I do decoction a lot, so like straight out of Munich because it's cocked, but I'm also decocting my West Coast IPA, so things like
that's
that.
Crazy.
Yeah, yeah,
that's madness over there.
So I had
a
forgotten
decocted
about
IPA.
A decocted IPA. You know what, I like the concept. Is it possible to reproduce the effects of decoction in beer without actually doing decoction, or is it impossible?
I don't think so. And we tried straight out of Munich. We at first at straight out of Munich, we're just doing it with step mashes. We have a dedicated mash tun, so we do step mashes on everything. But then we're able to transfer a portion of the malt to the ladder tun, decoct the last portion of it before you transfer it out to the ladder tun. And we did the first time we did that. Was actually a collaboration. Talking about collaboration, we did it with my old brewery, Rahr & Sons. We did a Maibock, decocted Maibock.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so we're like, this is cool, and we figured out how to do it. We had to, where the grain comes in to the mash tun, we couldn't get it to boil. So we're like, let's stick some towels into that hole. And then as soon as we did that, the mash started boiling. Like, oh, we can do this.
We did it.
So it started boiling. So we did it on the straight out of Munich. We tried both batches side by side. Like, I don't know why, but the decocted one tastes better. And we had an MBAA, Master Brewers Association talk with a brewer in Czech Republic that Brian brought on the call, Kelly, what's his name? Monday night.
Peter Kiley.
Monday night. Had a few. It's been at the end of the beer fest now.
Yeah,
so
it is.
Peter brought him on, and he's like, "We do decoction on our beers, and the beer tastes more drinkable, but we don't know why." I'm like, wow, that's good to hear because I don't know why either.
Yeah,
and y'all been doing it for a very long time. So we do decoction on straight out of Munich, and the beer tastes better.
Yeah. Matt, you were shaking your head too when Brian said, "Can you replicate that?" So
no, I don't think you can.
Do you do any decoction?
Unfortunately, on our system, there's not really easy way for us to do it. Because we have an electric.
It's hard.
System, and we have a minimum boil volume. It'd just be too hard. I will say seawater sounds delicious.
Hey, it'll be out next week actually.
So
that's a Hoegaarden evolved into a Goza, is that
correct?
What you said?
Okay.
Interesting.
I had looked into your background way back when I was stalking you earlier on in the internet days. That sounds very weird, but I'd seen that you had been involved in that. So you were brewing like Peter Celis's brewery in Texas at one point.
Right, yeah. So they restarted the brewery. Christine Celis brought the brewery back to Austin and needed a brewer. So I came down to Rahr, and I was there for the first about, 14 to 16 months before coming back out to Georgia. Yep.
So I have a long shot question since you are at Rahr & Sons, because I have a buddy in the area that did a lot of like collaborative stuff with them.
Yeah.
Do you by any chance know Stan Hudson in Fort Worth?
Sounds super familiar.
I bet you would. So Stan, good friend of ours. We've known him for a decade or better.
I'm
now.
Sure I do.
Yeah. But Stan now owns Neutral Ground Brewing Company in Fort Worth. But
okay.
What's the big homebrew club in that area?
Oh, well, I know the festival's called Blue Bonnet, but
something in hair, I feel like. H-A-R-E.
Yeah.
But anyhow, he was part of that, did stuff with Raw and that. So when you said that, I was like,
we had like a kind of Iron Chef kind of brew deal going on at the local homebrew club, but I can't remember the name.
I think they did a lot with Raw and stuff at the time. So, all right. Interesting. Good stuff. I didn't know you were there or at Cellus, because Cellus was one of the OG craft beers, really, wasn't it?
Yeah. So they had an interesting story. You know, obviously, so Pierre came over from Hoegaarden, started the brewery, and then basically it got so big they ended up selling to Miller. Miller shut it down early 2000s, and then the brand kind of floated around in Michigan and I think DC for a while, and then they were eventually able to bring the brand back to Texas.
Yeah, are they still open down there?
Yep.
I knew they'd relaunched, but I thought I heard they'd close there. Yep. I need to find that.
Still based on your experience brewing that beer, have you ever considered? I don't think I've seen one on your list of beers. Have you considered doing a Belgian with this in some way, possibly an homage to that, or no?
I don't want to brew the same beer. I want to make it what's unique to Round Trip, which is doing, you know, what's the German element we're bringing it. Every beer we have says either some sort of German element if it's ingredient procedure or blending different styles. So,
good stuff. Now, Matt, I love the lagers, the pilsners, all of those lighter beers.
I'm liking this hazy you brought over, that's for sure.
But Matt also does another one of my favorite things. And that's a big long boil adjunct stout. You've got quite a few of those as well, right?
We do. We don't boil quite as long as some other places, but you know, we'll typically do about 3 to 6 hour boils.
Okay.
Really high starting gravities. You know, if we're going specific gravity, 1150, 1160, really high. They finish high. They're nice and sweet when they're done.
Yeah.
A lot of barrel aging. We have a barrel aging facility where we have about 40, 45 barrels going right now. So between barley wine.
You fit 45 barrels in there, man?
It's barrels are spread out all over the ground. It's wild.
Yeah. I have seen them tucked away in people all around.
We got some barley wines. We got some Baltic porters. We got some stouts. We have some wilds.
If you can get a forklift in there and get 80 barrels in there.
If we had a forklift, my life would be a lot easier. Yeah. But we do not.
He's just throwing them over his shoulder right now, man. So
gotta work off the beer somehow.
We were talking about it, and I noticed a theme with your beer names. And I was going to point it out. Perception, like mind. You've had like Mind Palace or Mind. You have a lot of mind and memory theme things. And I think it's because you and I have the same problem with forgetting things.
Yes.
Is that right?
Absolutely. Okay. I remember, it's.
Do you remember us
in
talking
one ear,
about
out
it?
The other. Yes. It's vaguely.
It's just a little fake. Yeah.
You know, this is
Selective Memory. It's a good beer name, actually. Selective Memory would be
Write
that down on the radio so everyone else takes it.
You need to write it down because you'll forget it just like I will.
I'm bad with names. Like, there's been two or three people here that I've met today that the moment they say their name, it's gone.
See, names I got.
It's
down.
I know there's lots of little tricks. I've got to get better about that. I have to get better about that because I can be shaking your hand and you're saying your name and I'm like,
You're thinking too far ahead. You gotta live it. You gotta go
that's
in the moment.
That's the problem. Is you're thinking about what will I say to this person next, and they say that thing, and you forgot. You never heard the name the first time, so it's almost not your fault. So in a way, I'm kind of a victim.
Whatever,
I'm just gonna say
Brian,
this.
Whatever.
As is Matt. He's on
poor
my side.
Brian.
Oh wait, no,
poor,
you
were
not with
names, but
you
everything
remember
else.
Names.
Yes.
Yeah. I remember.
You have
faces.
To when you're in the business. You have to.
You really
make
do.
It a thing. It's a train. It's a skill.
You people take it very personally if you don't remember their name.
Not necessarily, but I will say that it is a big positive if you do remember their name.
It is.
So if you remember
always
their name,
is.
And even at a festival, I've had people come up to me and introduce me, and they come back for a second pour, and I remember their name. It's an everlasting relationship at that point.
Now you got them forever.
Well, and I'll say I appreciate that.
I will say before I walked over to the booth, because I don't know y'all as well as Matt knows y'all, I got on the website and I was like, which one's Tim, which one's Brian again?
There you go. It's
good thing y'all had pictures on the website.
I no longer feel bad about how badly I butchered your last name.
We frequently have to Google things that go around like that. You know, it reminds me of a story, Brian, when we first got to know Scott Hedin at Burnt Hickory. It was seriously like a solid year before he not only remembered Brian's name, but remembered his existence.
Oh yeah,
like we would always. Scott got to know me pretty well early on. He's like, "Hey Tim, what's up?" And then I think he introduced himself to you like at least half a dozen.
Oh
times.
Yeah, like six times. Yeah. I'm like, I'm the guy with the beard. You don't remember this?
That's worse than just like. There's one thing where you remember somebody and you're like, "Hey buddy, good to see you." You know, but you know you've met them, but you don't remember their name. It's one thing completely when you're also just like, "Hey, nice to meet you," and you have no remembrance.
I got a story. I'm going to punk Scott out here. I won't tell him who it was, but I had a buddy that interviewed with Scott for a job, and like 3 months later went to the brewery, and he didn't remember it. So that's he's like, he didn't remember me. I interviewed with the guy. So
that's amazing.
We love Scott, though.
Pro tip, every time somebody says, "Hey, how you doing?" You're like, "Oh, it's nice to see you again." You say that to everybody, every time, all the time, because you probably did meet them. And if you didn't, they're like, "Oh, I don't think we've met." I'm like, "Oh, my God, I'm sorry. I thought we had." You look so familiar to me for some reason. And then you get to meet them.
It's a win.
Nobody has ever been upset about that.
You can't lose.
Ever.
You can't lose. That's it. So, y'all, you tune in here. You get beer education. You learn about our memory deficiencies.
That's right.
All that you need to know. You know, talking about long boils and that, we were talking to Scales from Atlantucky Brewing a couple weeks ago. And he mentioned that Peter Kiley came over and helped him get some stuff going. And I can't remember how long he said he boiled. I think it was like maybe 2 or 3 hours.
Woo.
And Scales is like, "Man, those 2 hour boils, that just really lengthens your brew day." I'm like, "You don't know nothing, Scales.
You don't know anything
you don't
about
even
brewing
know yet." So.
Like the long boil. The long boil game. Yeah.
Turn it on overnight.
It's quite the game.
Yeah. I think we've seriously heard about like 30 hour boils.
Oh, right? Yeah.
For Excuse
some
me?
Places.
Yeah.
Do it.
30
I
hours.
Don't remember. Medianoche. That's Weldworks, right?
Ah, well,
they've got a super long boil. I don't know. I don't want to misspeak and say that's for fact, but it's a very, very long boil.
Oh my God.
Orpheus was often in the 30 something to 40 something hour boils. Yeah, for real. And like, if you have the beers, like they're motor oil and you like swirl them in your glass and you turn your glass orange and they've got legs, I'm like, you can't get that any other way.
Three Taverns, Helm's Deep.
What's that?
Helm's Deep from Three Taverns.
That's another mash this year,
and that triple mash was phenomenal. That was stellar.
Yeah,
but that's another one. You'll swirl it in the glass, and it paints the glass. You know,
it's an orange glass.
Hangs onto the walls there. Crazy stuff, guys. Thank you so much for joining us. We greatly appreciate it, Craig Muskogee, Mikoski, something along those. Craig Mikoski from Roundtrip. If people want to know more about what's happening at your brewery, what's going to be the best way for them to do that?
The best thing coming up?
No, the best way for people to find out what is.
Oh, sorry.
Or what is coming up? Go ahead and tell us what the best thing coming up is.
Oh, everything's coming up. God, we got Oktoberfest coming up. And for a German brewery, Oktoberfest is definitely what's coming up.
You're already looking forward to Oktoberfest.
I am. Well, you know, for Oktoberfest, for the distributor starts in July.
Yeah.
So that's
make sure you get them on the shelves. That's right.
Looking forward to that. And I honestly just love the style in general. Best way to get a hold of us or look us up is Roundtrip Beer, Roundtrip Brewing on the Grams or Twitters.
All
I don't know. I run the marketing.
Right.
I make the beer.
That's
right.
I don't know.
Aren't you on Twitter?
We're on the internet, I think.
Google Roundtrip
sure
and look
internet.
For us. We're out there somewhere, man. We're out there somewhere. Matt Curling, Variant Brewing. What's the most exciting thing coming up for you guys?
You know, we do a new beer every week, so those new beers are it's difficult to keep up with sometimes. But coming up soon, we have a Kolsch. We have a 3-year wild barrel aged whiskey barrel aged sour coming, done with orange and cherry. It's old fashioned inspired.
Ooh, that sounds good.
It's going to be really tasty. It should be at the Wild Beer Fest at Reckenbar.
All right.
And we also have a few new IPAs on the horizon that are the names are TBD as we are.
That's what's the hard thing.
With
names are hard.
We've thrown out a few here.
We do it moments before sometimes, but we get several new hazies coming and lots of new beers. So.
Good stuff. And where are people going to find out the exciting stuff coming up with Variant?
You can always follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and drinkvariant.com. Our draft list updates real time with our on tap. So whatever you see on the board at the brewery is what you're going to see online.
There you go. Good stuff. Guys, thanks again. We really appreciate
you got it.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Y'all, that about wraps it up for this episode of the Beer Guys Radio Show. For more craft beer info, follow us online. We are Beer Guys Radio on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Thank you so much for tuning in. Have a great week, and don't forget to drink local. Cheers.